Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting the film series Testigo Witness, Goya in the Movies. Held on select Fridays in May, each film touches upon artist Francisco de Goya's visions of the world, kicking off with Pan's Labyrinth by Guillermo del Toro on May 10th at nortonsimon.org.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Wonderful to have you with us on Air Talk, and I so appreciate your generous support of the coverage we give to so many topics like veterans issues with the Secretary of Veterans Affairs just joining us. And now we're so pleased to have from San Francisco, UCSF, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine, Dr. Peter Chin Hong. Dr. Chin Hong, very good Thursday morning to you.
Good morning, Larry. So great to be on. Thank you.
We start with some good news. Johnson & Johnson says the U.S. health officials have extended the expiration date for millions of doses of its COVID-19 vaccine. The extension is an extra 6 weeks. The drug maker says the FDA approved a longer shelf life for those one-dose shots. State officials had said that many unused doses would reach their original three-month expiration by the end of this month. So, Dr. Chin Hong, it sounds like very good news to get the six-week extension that the J&J vaccine would still be effective and usable.
It's huge news, Larry. It's huge news for two reasons. First of all, it is a great option for folks in the United States who wanted, for reasons of convenience and other reasons, to get one shot without having to come back for a second shot. But most importantly, I think freeing up more millions of vaccines will help the U.S. in its donation effort. And of course, they've been stepping up that donation effort. Now, the Biden administration has pledged to donate 200 million doses to the rest of the world.
And the Johnson & Johnson would seem to be particularly good for that because it is a single dose, right? So areas of the world that are less developed, more rural, there could be big advantages of this over the mRNA vaccinations.
Exactly. The other reason why it's great for the rest of the world, as well as rural areas in America, is that, again, you don't need ultra cool temperatures to store it. It's much more forgiving in terms of the distribution chain.
All right. If you have questions for Dr. Peter Chin Hong, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Yesterday, members of the Cal OSHA Workplace Safety Board met again to look at what sorts of recommendations they'll be making, particularly for mask wearing on job sites. You might recall that last week there was a very contentious 9-hour meeting over what the rules would be starting June 15th, next Tuesday, when the state essentially opens up. And what it called for is a workplace that where not everybody is vaccinated, that everybody should continue to wear face coverings. Now the Workplace Safety Board at Cal OSHA is suggesting that fully vaccinated employees could go without wearing a mask in almost all work sites. Healthcare facilities, of course, not part of this. You'd still have to wear a mask on public transit. There are a few other places where it would still be required. Dr. Chin Hong, what do you think about the board's reversal and making this recommendation yesterday?
It leaves me with a sigh of relief, Larry, because I think it would have been very confusing for employees to live in two worlds: the world of the CDC guidelines, as well as the state guidelines, and then the world of the workplace. And to have alignment makes it less confusing. I think it makes it simple. Simpler is always better. And of course, we have to be flexible as a community so that if things change, we can modify. But again, starting off with one rule for everybody, I think makes a lot of sense to me.
So then for workplaces, it sounds like it's going to be an honor system, essentially, and they're just going to have to trust that their employees who are not fully vaccinated wear masks. You see any better system than going that route?
Yeah, I mean, I think trust is going to be an issue. Trust is an issue not just for the workplace, but I think for the rest of us in the community as well. I think what I anticipate is that after June 15th, that not everybody will suddenly throw off their masks and put in a bonfire and sing around the bonfire, but rather I think because of questions about trust in the beginning, people will probably keep on their masks, some folks, until they feel a little bit better about the circumstances.
All right. If you have questions for Dr. Peter Chin Ong, again, you can tweet them at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. The U.S. saw remarkable increases in the death rates for heart disease, diabetes, and some of the other major killers that over the course of the pandemic year. The question is, what's the reason for that? Was COVID-19 somehow directly a part of that, or was this people staying away from the typical health maintenance care that they would have been getting had it not been a pandemic year? What do you think is most likely at work here, Dr. Chin Ong?
I think it's a little bit of both, but it's mainly people not going to the healthcare system for routine healthcare maintenance, even colonoscopies, pap smears, all of the things that we were worried about. I think from the statistics, they're holding true in terms of, you know, about 8% death rate increase from Alzheimer's, even blood pressure's up, stroke control, stroke deaths are up about 5%. But it's also interesting to think about a misclassification of COVID so that particularly in the early times, people weren't calling something COVID, lack of diagnostics, lack of wanting to blame systems. So they're calling it something else. So I think it's a little bit of both, but it's mainly people not getting healthcare maintenance.
Also, one of the things we've seen consistently with COVID-19 is the risk obesity displays for people who get COVID, and so often problems with their lungs that have resulted from that. Does this give healthcare providers some additional leverage to talk with patients about their weight, or what is there a potential positive out of this terrible result for so many people who were obese and overweight who lost their lives to COVID?
Yes, I think it's certainly a starting point for a conversation that healthcare providers can have with patients. On the other hand, it's also a starting point for empathy, because I think it also illustrates that COVID and staying at home and the stress of COVID is one of the multiple ways in which obesity is informed by. It's not just a simple solution or formula of eating and exercising. It's really multifactorial, including stress, circumstance, even though one can say, well, you're at home, you can have a better exercise program, but then again, it really illustrates how complex weight gain is in our society.
Again, we're at 866-8893-5722, 866-893-KPECC. To join us, Cynthia in San Gabriel says, I had the Johnson & Johnson single-shot vaccination, but I only see the mRNA vaccines like Moderna or Pfizer's, you know, talking about the effectiveness. I don't ever see the stats on J&J. I feel like I got the wicked stepsister of shots. Cynthia asks, should I get a Pfizer or Moderna shot?
At this point, I think the answer is no, because even though there hasn't been a lot of data in terms of efficacy and variants, et cetera, recently, we do know that for all of the vaccines, regardless of what you have, you're going to be protected against the most serious consequence, which is, again, serious disease, hospitalizations, and death. So I think that is something to celebrate. And, you know, infection data is probably not as compelling to many of us in the healthcare system as, you know, preventing some of these most serious outcomes. So I think Cynthia right now should be rest assured. I think we may see further guidance about boosters perhaps in the future. But for right now, sit tight and feel good.
All right, Cynthia. Thank you for your question. We'll continue with Dr. Peter Chin-Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center. He's professor of medicine at UCSF, infectious disease specialist, and we'll take your calls and your questions as we continue on this Thursday morning here on Air Talk. I was just thinking about Tom and Rita with their challenge. And of course, they went through COVID-19 and were sick very early on in the pandemic, and gave many of us a preview of how challenging it can be. Of course, you know, they came out thankfully the other side from it, but we have a sense of how serious COVID-19 could be very early on. Your questions for Dr. Peter Chin-Hong were at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Jose in Downey says, we're planning to have a Father's Day gathering in the backyard with 12 people, 8 vaccinated, 4 unvaccinated, and unwilling to wear masks. I wonder what Dr. Chin-Hong thinks about it. Is it safe for the unvaccinated to congregate with the vaccinated outdoors?
That's a great question. I think right now in the outdoor setting again, if the unvaccinated folks are unwilling to wear masks and they come from multiple households, there's a chance that they would be transmitting to each other. But given the low levels of disease in the community right now, particularly in Southern California, actually, it's the lowest number per 100,000 in all the regions in the state. The chance is small, but it's there. So I think the vaccinated folks won't have any problems with getting it. There's a small chance that the unvaccinated folks, if they come from multiple households, would. But again, given where we are in the community, it's going to be a small risk. But I would take that opportunity to have a conversation in a non-judgmental way about you know, fueled by curiosity, why they didn't get vaccinated so far.
It's just, you know, so many of the people who've dug in their heels about this, Dr. Chin-Hong, as you know, it really doesn't matter what you say to them. It's they've made their decision and they're not going to do it. And I'm sure you see this with your patients, and your colleagues at UCSF see that kind of resistance as well.
Yes, definitely. I think the remaining folks who are unvaccinated are definitely a range of different reasons, have a range of different reasons, but it's definitely a hard nut to crack.
All right. 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. San Francisco has one of the highest vaccination rates in the country, the city nearing a coronavirus herd immunity. L.A. is still said to have months to go, but I raised this yesterday and I want to raise it again. Johns Hopkins, Dr. Marty Makary, who writes on COVID-19 for The Wall Street Journal, has posited that what we have is much more immunity than is readily apparent because of the number of people who've been exposed to COVID-19 but were asymptomatic and weren't tested for it. So his argument is, we've got a significant percentage of people who've, unbeknownst to them, had COVID, coupled with those that have been vaccinated, bringing us essentially to herd immunity. And I wonder if that's why here in Los Angeles, Dr. Chin-Hong, you are seeing such low rates of COVID-19 because we had that huge surge of people who got it here.
Exactly. You know, as we've talked about before, it's estimated that at least 1 in 3 folks, probably in LA County, has seen COVID naturally over the bad winter surge and before that. And when you look at the numbers, actually, it's striking because number of new cases for the last 7 days, Southern California, 13, Northern California, 50, Bay Area, 16. So vaccination rates don't tell the whole story, as you pointed out. You know, LA probably has a 55% vaccination rate now compared to other counties like San Francisco, where it's 80% in some areas. But again, the numbers speak for itself. And it reflects the combination of vaccines plus natural herd immunity.
Yeah, and so I guess why don't we talk about that when public health officials talk about herd immunity? They'll talk about the high rate of vaccination in San Francisco or Seattle, you know, versus other cities. When that's only part of the story, why don't they also look to what the previous rates of known COVID-19 exposure, and I don't know if there are models to try and get to the hidden amount of exposure as well, and include that when looking at herd immunity?
I think that's a great point, Larry, but I think it's really difficult to do because when you get COVID naturally, there's actually a big range in how your immune response or what your immune response is, up to 1,000 in some cases between individuals, whereas the vaccine immunity is very reliable and we know what it does from the studies. And we also don't know how long natural immunity would last. But yes, I think it is missing from a lot of the narrative. For me personally, just looking at the number of new cases in the last 7 days is probably a good indicator of what herd immunity is. And like I mentioned, it's looking pretty amazing right now in Southern California.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center, joining us, infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF. Marty in Hollywood says, I'm wondering what's happening with coming up with modifications to the vaccines, boosters in the like. Will it be possible to have a future vaccine that could cover all the known variants?
Oh, that's a great question from Marty. So various companies are working furiously to devise different strategies. Do you put all of the different types and, you know, like passengers on a bus and develop a multivalent vaccine like we've done for other vaccines like influenza and even the flu vaccine has four different types every year? Do you just give a booster to the scary variant that's particularly vaccine resistant, like the Indian Delta variant? Or do you try to make a universal vaccine that's not just only good for the current COVID, but good for any future variant? So these are all things that people are looking at, but it still remains a question when and who would get a booster. You could also think of populations. Maybe it may be in very older individuals, like say over 80, as we know how long immunity lasts over time. It may be in immunocompromised individuals that we may need boosters. So I think these are all unresolved questions. But for right now, we have, again, tens of thousands of folks who got a head start from us in the trials who are going to be continue to be followed to give us additional info as well.
President Biden just said in England, where he was meeting with Prime Minister Boris Johnson, the president said the group of seven nations is going to join the U.S. tomorrow in announcing global vaccine donations in an aim to end the pandemic. You might have seen the news earlier this week that the U.S. is buying, I think it was 100 million doses of vaccine that's going to be donated to the global effort. Dr. Chin Hong, your thoughts about the president's announcement just moments ago?
I think it's great. It'll be limited by, you know, the ability to get all of the doses, you know, not just from storage, say in the United States, because we purchased more than a billion doses as part of Operation Warp Speed. But the idea that not everything will work, but turns out that everything is working pretty well. And we didn't even get any approval yet for Novavax, which has some really good data. So I think, you know, 200 million doses donation from the U.S. Is going to, you know, make a dent in the world and hopefully followed by other countries. But again, you know, with the Indian pandemic going on now, it's going to limit the use of big generic companies to really scale this up. So I think it'll initially be a matter of supply and then, of course, some people wonder if it's still going to go to the elite in the different countries.
Yeah. And let me just update. I way lowballed the purchase of vaccines. My apologies. It came out last night and I recalled the number incorrectly. It's 500 million doses of Pfizer's corona vaccine that the president announced last night will be contributed from the U.S., plus then the group of seven nations with their announcement tomorrow. Dr. Chin Hong, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks so much.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.